I think the best example is that a dog or a plant is an inanimate. Okay, dog is more closer to human to an inanimate. So if you have pets, how do you know you have a good relationship with your pet?
Wagging his tail. Must be petted and hugged, played with.
You're attuned to the dog, right? Because they can't speak of it. They can bark. So you can kind of, over time, you'll understand what their barking means, right? So same thing with money. So you're attuned to it. Same, okay, with plants. Let's go to plants. So plant, how do you know you're taking good care of the plant?
It grows, right?
With money, how do you know you're taking good care of money?
It grows.
And you're not overspending. Overspending is neglecting money and not respecting money. So it's about the energy you put in. Like, how do you feel? Like, when you ask yourself, how do I feel about money? So we explore that. If, like, people feel like, oh, money is stressful, money is evil. So we go through that, like, all the emotional reasons how you feel about money.
You're listening to the Engineer of Finance podcast with Ken Green. Please stay tuned to the end of the episode to hear boring yet important disclosures. Thank you.
Hi, this is Ken Green, the host of the Engineer of Finance podcast, and I'm so excited. I do not have to do another monologue. I have a wonderful guest on, Christine Tay. She is the owner of Tay Financial Coaching, and you can find her company on tayfinancialcoaching.com. She's out of Las Vegas, Nevada, which a lot of people don't live in Nevada. I think Reno, Tahoe area is right next to Vegas. That's like an hour flight and a 7-hour drive, depending on how we drive. So thank you for coming on the show from Southern Nevada. It's nice to meet you, Christine, and I'm glad to introduce you to everyone who listens to the podcast.
Yeah, nice to meet you too, Ken. Thank you so much for inviting me to your podcast. I'm excited.
So as a financial coach, what inspired you? If you could give a little bit of background of your story, what you're about, where you came from, why, how you landed in Las Vegas, and what attracted you to being a financial coach? I think that'd be really nice to hear. And I'll have some Vegas questions for you too. But
yeah, thank you so much. That's a very good question. So basically, I've been a corporate employee all my life. I'm Chinese, born and raised in the Philippines, and I moved to the Bay Area in 2000. And then, so I started working in corporate all my life. I was a data analyst to begin with. Actually, I was a data analyst for probably majority of my corporate life. And then I realized corporate life is not my life. And you go to work on a Friday, people always say, oh yeah, I'm looking forward to the weekend. Monday, you go to work, you're at the elevator, you ask people, how's your weekend? Oh, it's Monday, I just can't wait for Friday. I can't say I didn't feel the same way too. So it just sounded like a depressing way to live the rest of my life till I retire. So I didn't want that. I'm a pretty spiritual person. And as a financial coach, I'm big into self-growth. I don't market my business as too spiritual, but then it's about learning about self-growth, their history, why they have traumas or money. So that's one of the things I help with my clients. So basically, I did hire a life coach, and then I always admire people who run their own business, who manage their schedule, who doesn't have a boss, whatever. So I set an intention. That was my dream. I want to be my own owner. And then like I can establish the rules. I don't want to have to deal with the policies, getting approval for here and there. I can just do whatever I want, create whatever rules I want. So 2016, I hired a life coach because I was trying to work on other things. So obviously we did talk about my life goals to career. So it turns out that she asked me, what do I love doing? And then through some soul searching, like I realized I really love finances, and I'm talking about personal finances. I've always been good at it. I love talking about it. It's just something that has always been interest me, my passion. And so then I started, so she encouraged me to, why don't you start that as something to offer free, and then you can see how you like it and see how you feel about it. So then I think August 2016, I started doing it for free for some of my friends. So in exchange, if they do enjoy what I offer them, I just ask them to write me a review. So after a couple of reviews, then I create my website. Someone found me surprisingly from the East Coast. He's actually a retired person. He somehow found my website from the East Coast. I'm like, wow, I went all the way, traveled there somehow. So then he was actually my first ever paying client. And I was so excited being paid, even though it was very low at the time compared to how much I charge now. I was like, wow, I got paid for something I love. And then people actually paid me to teach them about money, about managing money. So that was the start of it. So I was still working full time. And I was working at Visa at that time. MasterCard Visa, so it's a very huge company. So then I started doing that part time, nights and weekends. So people start finding me through Yelp, Google, referrals, website. And yeah, so I just keep doing that. So 2016 all the way till 2019. And I wasn't ready to quite quit my job because that's all the life I know, being a corporate employee, right? I've never been an entrepreneur. So it was terrifying, like not having a steady income coming in, not like giving up on the benefits. Visa had a very great benefits, vacation pay and everything. It's a lot to give up on, and then it's a huge risk. So then I wasn't ready. So I just did part-time 2016. Then 2019 came, there was just a lot of reorg. And again, in the corporate world, you have no control over it. So I got reorg three times. In a way, I got three different managers during that reorg. And that drove me crazy because every time I get reorg, you have to adjust to a new manager. So I just got fed up. I'm like, I don't want to be at the mercy of being in control of all this. You have no control over what's going on. So then I got fed up. And then I think March 2019, I started thinking of quitting my job so that I look at my finances and I make sure I read a plan. But a lot of it, like I was so focused on the numbers. I'm like, oh, I got to make this much money. I got to make this blah, 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 to make the six figures. When will I get make the six figures or equivalent to how much I'm making? So I was always in my head. So I talked a couple of business coaches, mentors, and then finally, so it was a lot of change more inside emotionally. So they say, yeah, you're focusing so much on the numbers. You're not focusing on what do you have to offer the world? Like, why are you doing? Like the real why. And also like when I start shifting my perspective and the energy inside to place from scarcity to abundance, because the way I think about it, if I run my numbers, like really, it will take time to get to six digit. Like, those business coaches will promise you, oh, I'm going to make you six figures right away. Those are all BS, to be frank. It takes time once you be an entrepreneur to actually reach the six figures. So a very honest entrepreneur will tell you honestly, it takes a while. It's a hard road to go. But luckily, I've been very fortunate that I read a book called Ask and It Is Given by Esther Hicks. So that shifted my energy. Ask and It Is Given by Esther Hicks. So it's about the law of attraction. It's about reading, you ask and it's given. So it's mama. It really taught me looking at ways differently, changing my vibration, how I feel about things. Because I was so focused on the numbers, which was on the scarcity mindset. So then as I shifted, say, like, oh, this is what I love to do, what I offer, what do I have to bring to the world? What's my purpose, my mission? So I focused on that one. And also I'm like, okay, I have my minimum because I'm a finance person. I know how much I have my recurring bills, my expenses, whatever. So let's say I only need to, $4,000 is my absolute minimum to pay for my food, my bills, and some fun stuff. So then I just have to make sure that I make that much money. So how many clients does that mean? So it's, oh my God, it's only four clients. So I could totally do that. So meaning if I think about it, if you look at an abundant perspective, like how many people are in my city and how many people are in the state and how many people in the country, because I can offer it remotely. So there's more than enough people who would need my help. Like I was actually surprised in the beginning. I'm like, wow, people need money help. This is like second nature to me to actually do budgeting. But there's a lot of people who are like just clueless, who just need so much of their help. And then a lot of it is not their fault because they were raised from parents who never taught them that skill. So luckily I had parents and family who was actually good with money. So I learned a lot from them as well. But not all of us, my brother isn't very good with money, but not all of us became very good with money, but I somehow managed to become very good at it. So then yeah, so it's not their fault. So then I'm just surprised that there's actually a lot of people who need it. So then it was fine because I shift my internal energy. Like somehow something shifted when I talked to people reading that book, just everything shifted, like from just focusing so much on, oh my God, I gotta make this much money, blah, blah. So this is my number one advice to people who are trying to quit their job. Like, it will take you time. Never compare, expect that you want to make as much as your corporate job. So forget about it. Know how much your basic necessities is, like you're not recurring expenses for your food, whatever. Those are your basics. So your first priority to make is to actually make whatever hustle, whatever it takes to get to pay for that. Then slowly over time, then it is going to keep, it will grow if you do the right thing. So obviously, I am glad that I did it part-time for 2 years before I quit my job. I would never have done it any other way. I always tell people who want to start, don't quit your job right away. Because then, first of all, you don't know if it's right for you. You don't know if you like it. You're still figuring out yourself, how you are relative to the business. You're also figuring out all the nuances of the business, how much to charge, blah, blah, and everything. So not having to worry about the financial stuff. So you can think about your corporate job as your investor while you build your business. So I'm so glad I didn't quit. Although I only made like a few thousand dollars during that 2 years. So it wasn't enough to pay for my living. So that's why I was hesitant and nervous to quit. But luckily, May 2019 was my first month on my own. I actually wrote a blog about this on my website. There's blogs there. You go to May 2019 archive. I wrote that there. I even wrote about the book, my journey, how it was like to me quitting my job. So yeah, it was, and because I really shifted internally, because like, we're all energy here. You shift, like you're a higher vibration, you're a happy person. Of course, you're going to attract more happier people, higher vibration people. So then I switched. And then the first month, like I was positive. I was passive cash flow right away. I made a lot of money. Actually, there was like, I had 10 new clients. I'm like, whoa, what happened? So then it was like, I didn't really do anything. Like they just somehow found me. So my energy somehow attracted that. And so Evan, and I'm fortunate and proud to say that since May 2019, I've been profitable since, and I only had 1 month, I think July 2019, that I was negative. When I say profitable, I made enough to pay for all my personal expenses and business expenses. Granted, my business expenses is it's a very low overhead business. Yeah, so granted, but yeah, it's been profitable. That's my definition of profitable. Some people say profitable, oh, you're making more than your business expenses. So mine is about like paying enough for my personal and business expenses. That's what I consider profitable because this is my only source of income. Yeah, I've been very lucky and it's been just a steady growth, but it took some time to actually get to how much I was making in my corporate world, maybe 3 to 4 years, but it's always been profitable. So that's my point in saying that it will take time for you to even reach the level as you were in the corporate. So have that realistic expectation.
It's a great story. And thank you for sharing. I can tell you, I was listening, I just going down memory lane for me where it's very being an entrepreneur, we're naturally optimists, aren't we? I mean, yeah. Because you have to be. And I really liked your transition because that was the approach I took was loved engineering, but also learned I loved helping people in the money space. And it's amazing, like a lot of people need health. And to your point, typically we get educated on money through our parents. And if our parents are really good at it, wonderful. If they're not, which welcome to the American way, most people, they spend a little bit more than they make.
Yeah.
And so when that kind of knowledge and education is passed on, it's this perpetual machine of incredible amount of debt and a lack of wealth. And it's what a blessing that you're naturally good at it. You applied it to yourself. You have a gift for it. And then also I probably talked about in the past, and I've talked about it for sure, one-on-one with people is like, hey, just because you're not passionate about your job and you don't love it, doesn't mean you give you permission just to cut that off and go out and do something new. Prove it. Put it, see if it's something that resonates and works. And what a great way for you to transition. You work real hard at your company, and then it's the after hours, the moonlighting, where you figured out it was something that really resonated for you, Christine, and it's wonderful. And congratulations. I was anticipating to lose money for 5 years, and here you are when I first went full-time, and here you were profitable in the first month. That's incredible. It's wonderful. And yeah. I assume you work out the joy of our technology. I assume you work out of your home office. Do you have actually?
This is my home office.
Isn't that nice? That helps. Like, brutal.
Yeah.
I was also too. I wanted to read that because your head was blocking. Okay. You can't reach what's in front of you until you let go of what's behind you. And how true is that?
Yeah.
Isn't it amazing how we allow history to create so much resistance into a future we don't know exists? And so dreaming it, envisioning it, but you came in such a disciplined way to do it. And so congratulations on your successes. And I would assume Bay Area, when you're talking about the Bay Area, you're talking about San Francisco area?
Yeah. Or? Yeah. Thank you for that. I live in Silicon Valley. So that's that's where the Google and the tech companies are.
So when did you move to Las Vegas? Was this when you went full time and realized maybe I might want a lower cost of living and not have to pay so much income tax?
That was more personal decision. So I will. But I'd stay in the Bay Area if this long story short. So basically, I quit my job May 2019, and then I was in a long-term relationship at the time. So when we broke up in 2020, so I didn't want to stay there because we own a house together. Then when we decide we're going to sell that, so I was looking, the rental was like $3,000-$4,000. I'm like, no way am I going to pay other rent. So then I looked at, my two choices would either be Seattle or Vegas. I wanted somewhere drivable because I have two dogs. And luckily, I got ownership of the dog. Yeah, so I decided to go Las Vegas because rain didn't really entice me. So Las Vegas, I don't really gamble or do gambling, casino.
Of course not. You live there. That's why. You understand how that works.
So I know people say you're in Las Vegas, so you must be into that. But actually, I don't do any of that. The main reason I moved here was because for several reasons, right? No state tax, no rain. I know Washington don't have state tax, but the ring didn't really entice me. So Las Vegas is more, if you want the more happening life, you can go to the strip. If you want that, because outside of the strip, it's really just a regular life. So I have the best of both worlds because I do appreciate there's performances. I love dancing. So there's a lot, there's dance classes like taught by performers. So they're really good. There's very great talents here for that. So I recreated line for that myself. So yeah, the main reason was because of the personal reason. So I moved here. Then I'm like, then it just worked out for me. I moved here, no state tax. Then I end up also being able to buy another house because the house we sold was, if I buy another one, it would have been at least $1 million. And then, so it's just ridiculous for me to buy into a house and you still have to pay more stuff after you buy, which is the case for a lot of my clients. They pay $1 million and they spend more on upgrading, whatever. It's ridiculous. So here in Las Vegas, I rented an apartment first because I want to make sure this is where I want to settle. So after a few months, I decided, yeah, I do really like it here. So I decided to look for a house and I end up with this brand new house. It was like 4 times less than what it was in the Bay Area. So I'm almost and I'm almost able to pay off this house. And that's only possible because I live in Vegas. So that's I guess you could say that is one of the reasons that enticed me to come here to Vegas too.
Yeah. Welcome to Nevada. Well, you've been here for a few years now and I'm obviously a very smart move in many ways, just from you're a money person. Just on your actions, how can you justify that kind of opportunity cost, paying that kind of taxes in California? And what a beautiful state. I love California. I love visiting. I just don't really like the taxes. But and so when it comes to helping also too, I really loved how, yeah, you're right. A lot of these business coaches and life coaches are so full of crap. Like it's just cloud to cloud. And I'm not attacking the industry or any individual, but I think it's very important. Matter of fact, right before this podcast, very sharp, a smart mechanical engineer gave me a call. Very interested in money and finances, thinking about potentially making a career change. And he's all, what am I in for? And I said, well, here's the pain and here's the blessing. And unfortunately, the way it's positioned, it's like this, oh, how wonderful it is to be an entrepreneur. And yeah, it can be wonderful, but it's something that involves delayed gratification, discipline, incredible hard work. But to your point, you also have control, like you, and it sounds like you have a balanced way because me almost have figured it out. I have the worst boss ever myself. My boss is a psycho and it's very easy to, what we ask of ourselves is by far more demanding than we'd ever ask on an employee, unfortunately. Yeah. But you came in measured, very nice approach. And also, I don't know if you've ever seen the movie, Joe Versus Volcano, but it's a hilarious movie. And the way you're describing going to work, it's just this, they're just miserable going in on a Monday. And it's dreary and there's no lights and nothing works. And everyone's just counting the seconds to get the hell out. And also, I can't remember the other, I don't know if it was Office Space of the movie where he's like, how come I have three bosses? And you're saying you had three different managers. Oh, yeah, you had three bosses. And you don't know which one to answer to. So that's funny. But you did in a disciplined way on how you moved. And congratulations on your successes. I'm curious and I'm glad you got to keep the two dogs too. One of my brothers, he had a tough breakup years ago. And he didn't get to get both dogs. He only got one. And it just tore him up. Yeah. So
I would be heartbroken if I only got one. So unfortunately, I got both of the dogs.
I mean, he was offering just ridiculous numbers to get both. And so congratulations on keeping the two dogs. Yeah. What is it, your approach, or how does it resonate, if you don't mind, if I can keep you for a little bit longer? If you need to subscribe to me and anyone listening, what is your approach? What's natural for you? How do you help different families when it comes to money? And isn't that interesting? You're talking about clients buying $1 million plus home and they need help budgeting. And how true is that? And by the way, boy, have I learned that. How do you make budgeting fun? Because that word's the kiss of death. You say budgeting to 99 of 100 people, no one wants to be put on a diet. And that's usually how people see it when you say the word budget. For me, it's always been, this is permission to spend. To your point, this is what I need to survive on. This is what we need to survive on. Once you understand that metric and what's involved, everything else on top is permission to spend and permission to go on a trip, permission to go do some other investment, permission to do whatever. And so what is your approach when you're onboarding a new client and how do you help people in that transition? Obviously, and by the way, also too, I admire when you learn from your business coach or life coach that, yeah, you focus on the value. And that's the beauty of entrepreneurs. You focus on the value first and what you can create. And then the income will come, right? Once you create the value first. And yeah, wonderful. But yeah, what's the approach you do? How do you help people in that arena that are coming to you? Like, what is it you offer? And how do you help them make that transition?
Yeah. So my clients are different kind of clients. I know there's business coaches who always say, you gotta have a niche. I'm like, again, that's what the beauty of being a business are. You do what's best for you. You figure things out. You don't have to follow anybody's rule. Okay. So that was your boss telling you, you got a niche and you have no choice but to niche, and then you're going to hate doing that. So I do whatever I want, and then this works for me. So my clients come from all over the place. So they range from issues with living paycheck to paycheck. They have no idea. They're always going negative. They have no idea where their money goes. They have trouble with even getting to positive cash flow. To people who actually have money and they want to know how to do proper tax planning, tax efficiency. I'm also a tax professional. So tax season is starting, and I'm starting to get new clients applying for that to be my clients, because I'm topping. I'm a 1 month person. I do not like having someone above me or below me. So I run everything on my own because I try to make sure my processes are all efficient so I can handle everything on my own.
As a professional, can you clarify that real quick? As a tax professional, filing taxes, you're a tax preparer, CPA, enrolled agent?
I'm an enrolled agent.
Oh, okay. Yeah. You're an EA. Oh, great.
Yeah. That's the only part I niche. I only niche on personal taxes. I don't do corporate taxes. I can do that, but I choose not to because I already have more than enough on my plate. So personal, but I can read the S corporation and all that stuff, because when a new financial coaching client come to me, then S corporation this. So I actually analyze everything. Like, it's very holistic working with me, like from budgeting to I teach you about investment. I'm not an investment advisor. I teach you how it works, how the investment market works, diversify risk. And I just don't give advice. I don't tell you what to do with that. So I'm very careful about that.
Well, also, I think that's a smart, just to interject, I think that's a very smart approach. And also, I love the fact that you're an analyst, right? That's been your whole career. And what a nice segue into what you do. You're an analyst. Yeah. And also, when it comes to the investment space, I'm sure you've seen this all the lives you've impacted. The biggest impact you can make for families is helping them change their cash flow. And the very nature that you're taking these families from negative to positive, by far more of an impact than any investment out there, for sure. So anyway, sorry, I just want to interject when you said analyst. I just thought that was great.
So. Yeah, I do everything. That's a practical piece, the budgeting, the investing, the tax planning. Tax preparation is a separate piece. So that's financial coaching. What's included there in terms of taxes, the tax planning, tax education, and then tax coaching. So the preparation piece is a separate piece. So then they pay that separately. My minimum there starts at $400. So that's the practical piece and the analysis being an analyst. I also deal with their emotion because money is emotional. So that's when we get to their history, their trauma, how they were raised, how their parents was, like how did they handle money, like how, like all this like scarcity mindset, abundance mindset. So it's about learning what is your relationship with money and then building a good relationship with money. Because if you don't have a good relationship with money, then it's very hard for you to succeed in something if you don't have a good relationship with it. If you
a good relationship with money? It's an inanimate object. What do you mean by that?
Very good question. I think the best example is that a dog or a plant is inanimate. Okay, dog is more closer to human to an inanimate. So if you have pets, how do you know you have a good relationship with your pet?
Wagging his tail.
You're
happy,
attuned.
Running up, wants to be petted and hugged, played with.
You're attuned to the dog, right? Because they can't speak of it. They can bark. So you can kind of, over time, you'll understand what their barking means, right? Mm-hmm. So same thing with money. So you're attuned to it. Same, okay, with plants. Let's go to plants. So plant, how do you know you're taking good care of the plant?
It grows, right?
With money, how do you know you're taking good care of money?
It grows.
And you're not overspending. Overspending is neglecting money and not respecting money. So it's about the energy you put in. Like, how do you feel? Like, when you ask yourself, how do I feel about money? So we explore that. If, like, people feel like, oh, money is stressful, money is evil. So we go through that, like, all the emotional reasons how you feel about money. If you have these feelings around money, you have anxiety, it's like, money's evil. And I ask them, so, okay, let's talk about that. Why do you feel money's evil? So then they will say things like, oh, yeah, because rich people are evil. They only care about them. So blah, blah. So let's say you have feelings about that, about rich people. They're evil. What do you think is going to happen? You probably will never become rich because you're never going to become something you think are evil, right? Because then if you become rich, then you will classify yourself as an evil person. So then we go through that, like really dissecting and figuring out what exactly happened. So usually something happens. Some rich people like did them injustice or something like that. So we got to their traumas. And then in terms of anxiety, what is your anxiety about? Let's talk about that. If they overspend, sometimes they came from past where and their parents never buy them anything. So they're like, oh my God, I deserve all of these things. So they're going the other way. So then it's about balance. I do get clients who, let me give you a perfect example. I have a client, he was in his 60s, 70s. So he owned a lot of commercial properties. His net worth was like 368 digit net worth, assets minus liability. And he came to me when he hired me. He told me, I cannot afford a vacation. If you look at the net worth, it's like, that's ridiculous to hear that. So then he came from a scarcity mindset because he didn't feel. So the bottom line was like, he didn't feel he was worth investing money in. And he hated having so much cash. Whenever he had invest either the market or rental property, he's not willing. He's so like tense. So we had to go to the real reason, like, why do you not feel you're worth investing? You're in your 70s. Your main purpose is actually to enjoy life and spend all your money till you die. And you don't have kids. So where's the money going to go? Right? So we have to really dissect all that. So my class came from either one way or the other. So it's very interesting. That's why I don't niche, because I love all kinds of money problems. I love figuring things out. I love being creative. I love figuring out what works for you, because I'm not here to force my way on you, to force my budgeting system on you. And then, yeah, yes, you did say budgeting is not fun. It's not always fun.
Okay? Oh, I love it. It's just, I would argue that the majority of the nation hates that word. Look at our leadership. They sure hate it, right? They haven't held a budget for what, 3 decades? Amazing.
Yeah, that's only another topic. I'm not going to get into that. So like, basically, like, so yeah, so some budget, it starts out not fun, but I think like, usually not all my clients, majority of my clients, once they start tracking, they get into it and they're like, oh my God, I spent so much money. Then they actually end up enjoying. It's not necessary that they start enjoying budgeting. They're enjoying being on top of their finance, because it's a good feeling once you feel you are in control of money, that you are the boss of money. You're on top of it. You know exactly where money goes. So it's more the good feeling that comes out of being in control. That is the benefit that they see. That's what keep them doing what they're doing. So they see the benefit. So
nice I was going to say, it's nice that you touched on, and it sounds like when I work with families, what gets measured gets managed. And And typically the best way is, forget the budgeting. Let's just track cash flow for the next month or two. Let's just see where the money's going. And the very nature of that exercise, boy, do we have some pretty interesting discovery. And then with that measurement, now we get control. I have a very disgusting habit. I get on my scale every single morning. I've been doing this for the last couple of years. And it's amazing. The very nature of stepping on that scale, it started going down because I didn't like the number. Right?
Funny you say that. I am on a health goal too this year. So I just want to add, sorry, it's like that, not fun at first yet for a long time. I've been neglecting it, and I didn't want to take responsibility, because I came from a history of my parents not having healthy. So I had to take responsibility for that. But I've been kind of, I just want to eat whatever I want. There's too much work. Yes, it is work to be healthy. Yes, it is work to be healthy financially. Yes, it is work to be physically healthy. But is it work that's worth it? Heck yeah. If I don't go this route, where will this lead me? I can see where it led my parents. So that's not where I want to go. So yes, it is worth. But it is worth it for me in the long run, because that's where I want to go to. I want to be healthy, and then I want to be able to live a longer life and not having the same health problems that my parents have.
I revisit this concept with my friends. I'm sure I've talked about it on this podcast. I was talking to my wife again. Even I think just the other day with my assistant, is like, when we have to go through things that have this psychological resistance that we don't want to deal with, the biggest thing for me, and it's exactly what you have on the back of your wall, which I absolutely love, right, is that instead of bringing up the past, bringing the present into the future. I do not want to go work out in the damn treadmill in my basement. I know what I don't want to do. However, I know how I'm going to feel 1 hour later. And so I focus on bringing that future into the present, not thinking anymore, just go do it. It's done, and it just the endorphins, whatever, that high you get, it's like we've accomplished it, right? And so when you help families with budget and you're helping with the finances, and I just think that's such a wonderful idea. I've never even thought it that way about the feeling, like how do we feel about money? And I think that's a very nice paradigm and approach, because there is a resistance for some reason. It's amazing. You'll hear saying, oh yeah, rich people are evil. What's rich, right? And what's evil and why? So it's very nice you have those conversations to identify what could be in the way. And the scarcity mindset, I'm the one that I'm frugal. My wife might have defined me as cheap. Always have no problem putting a lot of money into
on that one. There's a distinction there.
I like the word frugal. But I was just curious, do you have any approaches when it comes to the budgeting side? Do you mind sharing for a few minutes? Like after identifying the relationship with money, getting through that hurdle, helping people track how the money is being spent. How do you help? You see all these different approaches. I think one of the best personally, I wish I got money for this, but I don't. But I've had the founder with YNAB, You Need a Budget, Jesse Meekum, on a few years ago. I think they have a great approach to budgeting. I think it's a great software program. Defining that every dollar has a purpose. And so it's a great forecasting tool. Most budgeting software out there, unfortunately, just tracks what just happened in the past. And we don't really have this conscious idea of what's coming forward because it's just not in front of us. Where YNAB has this approach where they're identifying the dollar. Hey, you have registration coming up. You have these things coming up. They happen on a systematic basis, right? Recurring every year. So as the money comes in and then forecasting these dollars, great approach where most of the online ones like mint.com with Intuit, it just tracks what's occurred. And so how do you help people? So it's great tracking software. How do you help your client put that money away for what it's intended to do, whether it's a trip or savings, emergency fund? What's your approach on that? Do you use software, spreadsheets, envelope systems? What's your approach on helping families that way? Or what's resonated for you?
Yeah, I'd be happy to share. Everything I do is with Excel or Google Sheet. So I don't use any app but personally. So it starts out when I teach my clients, we use Excel or Google Sheet. So it's a template I build. I do have a budgeting course that if you want to download the template and it walks over the entire how to use that. So there's a budget. Obviously, there's an income, everything coming in. And all the outflow, recurring expenses, your food, we all have to eat. So that is always a category there, how much food. That means everything you consume, like eating out, groceries, alcohol, whatever. So then it range from, you can go as low as 500 per person per month to as high as over 2,000. So depending on how you spend. Okay, so there are upwards clients who spend over 2,000. But it's okay as long as you can afford it. That's the bottom, you can't afford it. Then there's one category for whatever you want to try. If you have kids, usually that's a kids category. And then everything else get all lumped under discretionary or fun stuff. Okay, so it's very simple. I don't have a lot of category. So then you assign how much budget you need, like discretion. That could be for your car breaking down, whatever. It's a catch-all for everything. So let's say you put 1,000 there. Kids with daycare, whatever, it's probably over 2,000. So after all that, you have income, recurring expenses, and all these expenses. So let's say you bring in 10,000 a month. All your recurring expenses, like all the stuff you add up, is probably 7,000. So you're left with 3,000. So 3,000 is your padding or your saving. When I say padding, 3,000, because my budget, life happens, right? So actually 90% of the time, it doesn't follow my original budget. So I do adjust it month by month, depending on what's happening. This month, I'm going on a trip, so then it might be higher. So I do adjust it month by month. Like December was a high month for some people because they have to buy gifts. It's holiday. So you do adjust it, but this is your template to start with, and you go back and forth between however you think the money. That's when the planning is. We budget and plan month by month. So let's say that 10,000 you bring in, it could be 7,000 outflow this month. It could be 8,000 outflow 1 month. So whatever is, you set are 7,000, but you set 3,000 left over. So 3,000 is your padding. Let's say something happened. I don't know. It turned out to be more than what you put in a discretionary catch-all. And you have a $1,000 catalytic converter you have to do. That will be another $1,000. So you might have to take up from your 3,000 original savings goal to, it might be 2,000. Then the $1,000 will go towards that catalytic converter. But you still have $2,000. So that's what I mean by ending the month cash flow. That's the only non-negotiable for me and for all my clients. It has to end positive cash flow. You're making more than you are spending, okay? If you are overspending, so it's either you didn't plan ahead of time, you have a travel coming up, you just didn't plan, you didn't use. Budgeting is not meant for just data entry. It's meant for planning purposes and a lot of things. It serves a lot of purpose. So then you just didn't plan it. So you get $3,000 savings every month. You have an upcoming trip. You can plan for that. $1,000 you spent this month to book the flight, hotel, whatever. Then $1,000 next month for whatever, everything else, like excursion. And so you can plan for it. You can save that towards another savings account. So we do different systems for different people. Some of my clients, they need a separate fund or savings account for their travel because they want to allocate $15,000 a year. So then we save that slowly to that $15,000 bucket. And then sometimes, and they make sure they have emergency funds. So usually the goal is that never to touch the emergency, but I recommend 3 to 6 months for emergency fund, like in case you get laid off or you quit your job, then you have somewhere to tap into.
Yeah. How do you tie into that? It's great, by the way, isn't it? Why I like when you say you have that reserve coming over, right? It wears over and it builds up this buffer. I think I call it buffer, but it's the same thing, right? That padding, it's your permission to spend. Hey, now we got these dollars for the trip. Now we got these dollars for this piece. Do you have clients that just really struggle? I don't know what term it would be with credit cards. You can define someone who struggles with alcohol as alcoholism. I don't know what you call people who just have this propensity that because there's a $25,000 credit limit, they have to go put 25 on the credit. So how do you approach credit cards? I think credit cards can be very powerful. You get a lot of benefits with using them. Although some people struggle with that kind of initial power just because they have that money out there. How do you help families if they struggle with credit cards? What's your rule of thumb on that one?
So if they have that mindset, oh, I have $25,000 credit limit, so I can spend all of that. So I do not allow them to use credit if they have that mindset. So we have to work on the budget first, make sure they got the budget down so they only can use debit or cash, or if they really want to use credit card. So we work on the budget, how much they bring in, and let's say like it's $10,000. So they obviously have a cap how much they can charge. So then we set up one credit card. There's a max limit per week that they can charge. That's on their once. That's on whatever they want, they can charge that. On the recurring things, that's going to all go over debit. So there's reallocated money for the debit. And everything else on the credit card is a weekly. So I actually have this implemented with some of my clients that they just pay it every Sunday. Day one is Monday. Day seven is Sunday. So they pay whatever the balance weekly, Sunday night or Monday morning. So they start at zero again balance. And then that's their weekly cap, like $1,000. So they can only charge $1,000 for whatever they want, whatever, like eating out, anything that they want fun is $1,000 cap per week. So that way they're maintained on that budget. They're not going to overspend. It's not based on credit limit. I don't even pay any attention to the credit limit or the interest rate because that doesn't affect me. It's about how much can I charge? So I'm always able to pay off the statement balance.
No, I think that's a great approach. I've yet to find a credit card company doesn't have this. I love taking advantage of the float. I love getting all the points and the insurance protection, all these little things. And they also, everything's so automated, they actually have on the website, you go in, you just click a little checkbox that says auto pay the balance in full. So you never have the interest working against you. But I also think that's an interesting approach with some of your clients that you help. Just say, hey, this is your budget on a weekly basis. Instead of even taking advantage of that float, wipe it out every week. So it can't creep, can't grow, and put someone in a precarious position.
I want to say that only works if you only have one credit card. But some of my clients, if they have multiple credit cards, I'm a total fan of credit cards. So then you would really need that spreadsheet because it's very structured. It has all the credit cards, your 10 credit cards, you list out all the 10 credit cards. And then when you charge, you flag in which credit card that was. And I always tell my clients to change the closing date, the billing period, to the first of the month. So it's first to the first. So everything budget is month to month. So you're not overspending. So when at the end of the month, you pay the statement balance, it's going to match the spreadsheet total. So that's how I do it. Some of my, they just can't do the spreadsheet. It's just impossible for them. And again, I don't force my spreadsheet system onto people. I do have clients who are on YNAB. I have clients on Mint. And then there's another tool called Simplify. So they use that as well. So that's an Intuit product, actually, Simplify. So there's many products. So actually, I just got off a call from a client who does use Simplify. And it's actually a pretty cool tool. Everything has a pros and cons. But I like using spreadsheet because I like to be very proactive. I like to be able to play around with the formulas and everything. So because I'm a spreadsheet person. But that's me. I will never go to using tools.
You're a spreadsheet person because I'm sure every engineer listening to this podcast and CPA and analyst, you're an analyst, so you love spreadsheets. We live and die off Excel spreadsheets or Google. So that's just all decisions are made off that spreadsheet. So I thank you so much for coming on the show, Christine. I loved hearing your story and what you're doing to help people. And Christine Tay, what is the best way for listeners of the podcast to reach out to you if they have a question or want your help on something? What would be the best way to reach out to you?
So just go to my website, tayfinancialcoaching.com. So Tay is my last name, TEHcoaching.com, tayfinancialcoaching.com. Then there's buttons everywhere on my website to schedule a complimentary. So that's the best way to reach out to me. Or you can, there's a contact form also on the website, but do not call me because I never respond to my call because I have a lot of marketers calling, so they're always ignored. So
that
is the best way. Yeah, I know. So somehow they get your phone numbers now.
And they don't say, they just won't even listen. You can't be rude enough and they'll still try to hold you captive. Christine, thank you so much for coming on. We'll have everything on the show notes for people to reach out to. And also, I don't know how many know, but as an enrolled agent, a little different than CPA, as an enrolled agent, your license, you can help in all 50 states as an EA.
Yeah, I can help
preparation.
Anyone in the world, as long as it is it's a U.S. taxes.
Thank you so much. I wish you continued success. Keep changing lives. Thank you, Christine, for coming on the podcast. And everyone listening to the show, thank you for listening. I really appreciate the support. I love doing this podcast every week, and I look forward to next week's episode. Thank you, everyone.
Yeah, thank you, everyone. Thank you, Ken.
This podcast is for informational purposes only and should not be considered investment advice. The content is intended for United States audiences only. Opinions expressed are as of the date of this publication, and such opinions are subject to change. Green Financial and Insurance Services Limited, Green, is not responsible for any trading decisions, damages, or other claimed losses resulting from or related to the content presented. Green makes no representation as to the completeness or accuracy of the information presented. Past performance is not a guarantee of future results. Forecasts are not a reliable indicator of future results. Investors should be aware of the risks associated with investing. All investments are subject to investment risk, including possible loss of capital. Investors should seriously consider if an investment is suitable for them by referencing their own financial position, investment objectives, and risk profile. Consult with a qualified financial advisor as necessary before making any investment decisions. Thank you for listening to the Engineer of Finance podcast with Ken Green.